Hello and welcome to another episode of the Shock Doctors Podcast. I'm Jim Smith. And we are swimming in the infinity pool today. That is the... Or is it? I think fine is maybe the last word I would use to refer to the water this picture's swimming in. Yeah, it's nothing that says the infinity pool needs to be filled with water. So, yes, Infinity Pool is the latest feature from Brandon Cronenberg, son of David. And as I think we've observed in at least one prior episode, because we did his film Possessor a couple years ago, whenever that was newer, the two filmmakers are different, but you can definitely see the family resemblance. And I think that holds true here also. I don't know how you feel about it. So the film is about a washed-up writer. And, you know, you say washed-up writer and you think someone who was maybe successful for a few years or a number of years but has fallen on hard times. But, in fact, the writer in question, played by Alexander Skarsgård, we come to find wrote one book 6-odd years ago that was not particularly well-received and hasn't really written since. Right. Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure it's just like kind of thinly veiled Croatia, because there was some kind of title card like the Croatian film something or other, or Film Croatia, or what have you. Well, right, because if this is supposed to be Croatia, it's just like, oh, it's barbaric. Sure. Right. You know, some kind of code, even if it's medieval by what one might call our standards. But yeah, so it's some sort of nameless Balkan enclave or other. And the resort they stay in, which is apparently one of several of its ilk, it's a beachside, and it's got all manner of stuff to do. Like, it's got like a sort of fake town on the grounds of the complex, and then it's the whole thing is fenced in with fucking razor wire, and the guests are officially not allowed to leave. I mean, they leave when they're done, but they're not allowed to, like, leave and come back during the course of their stay. Yeah, as we come to find out. And then they are suddenly exposed, very literally, to the cold light of day. Latter-day horror icon whose name I can't quite place at the moment. Right. Yeah, naturalistic failure. It's that or some phrase very similar to that is her specialty. She's very adept at that. And the example that she proceeds to execute for at least James's entertainment, his wife does not seem all that amused, is failing to cut a roll in half with a knife. It's so that's actually what I've come to find this out relatively recently because people on Twitter have been making jokes about it. This is exactly how she sounds in real life. She sounds like a Victorian child ghost, just naturally. Boy, do they ever. Oh, man. I wouldn't say apathetic. I would say detached, because judging from the sound effects, it is rather vigorous and goes to completion. I can't believe I'm saying this. This is the second film we've done for this podcast where we see male ejaculate. It's not quite as operatic as that shot in Fabric, but we do see it, and he's just kind of. So yeah, she jerks him off and then kind of walks away, and he's just like, ugh. He's completely befuddled. The eldest son, specifically, very, again, medieval. Yeah. So he's got this mouth guard sort of thing that forces his mouth open like someone who is blowing a vacuum cleaner nozzle into their mouth. I sort of had half a laugh before I suppressed it just because I'm looking at him with this absurd expression. And it's not even, the scene is not funny. But he looks so absurd. And we should point out real quick that as part of this cloning process, you do have to pay what is an unmentioned but presumably exorbitant amount of money, because this is a privilege that they extend to rich Western tourists as part of their tourism initiative or something, I think the cop says. Yes. Well, yeah. Although his pleading is sort of semi-verbal to the extent that I'm like, is there like a little bit of a deficiency? Maybe. Right. Very, very like millennial nihilism thing going on there. You've gone dead around the eyes and, you know, things like that. Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
It's not exactly revenge. The way they pitch it to Skarsgård is that this guy, this detective, is the one giving him passport problems. And as we discover by the end of the movie, and as I suspected all along, James didn't have passport problems. He just hid his passport under the sink in the bathroom to give him an excuse to let his wife go home immediately after the car accident and let him be a murder tourist by himself back here with these other depraved lunatics. But anyway, they pitch it to him like, hey, this is the guy holding up your passport. You need to show him who's boss, basically. So we're gonna abduct him so you could Hulk out on him, more or less. Right. Actually, I think he runs all the way back to his hotel room, which is like a ways away from whatever villa the rest of them are in. He goes back to his hotel room, and then most of them are down in their weird murder masks on the ground floor, serenading up to him. Somebody's strumming a guitar or some shit, and then Mia Goth is at the door, sort of banging on it, like, "Come on, you're being a wimp." It was all in good fun, so on. Oh. He's very good. Yes. Right. The light just goes out of his eyes. It's just like everything else in the whole film has not fazed him so much as finding out that in fact he does not even have her as a fan. He's crushed. Right. Yeah. Right. Well, you know, the Balkans are very close to Greece. Just north, in fact. No, it's he's got like a cut or two. I think it's supposed to be the one that he was beating up. That was supposed to be the detective. Well, and she calls him the dog, literally. No. Yeah, no, he gives him the Phil Leotardo with his bare hands. Yeah, for a while. Tw 20 to 30 seconds. Right. Hope to see you next year. Great to meet you. I was like, Jesus Christ. I was just gonna say Heart of Darkness, Apocalypse Now, Kurtz sort of thing. Well, yeah, I don't have any direct experience with the original subject matter. I haven't read Joseph Conrad at all, but I think. Right, but I do think it lines up a little closer with Apocalypse Now, simply because I think that Kurtz is meant to have imposed his will in a way that is much worse than the locals might have done to themselves. Right. But yeah, that's the whole thing. So roll credits and more after the break.
Mr. James Foster, you have to come with us.
Here, the punishment for any crime committed is death.
What? What did you say?
That's for a significant sum. We'll build a double to send in for your execution.
Double.
Hello, listeners. It's Jim, here as always during the break to tell you some stuff you probably already know. Please follow us on Twitter at Shock Doctors Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/shockdoctorspod, or check us out on Apple Podcasts. The podcast is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got an idea for a movie you'd like us to check out, feel free to send us a DM on social media or email us at shockdoctorspod@gmail.com. And now, back to the show.
It's like a new skin working into place. So you need to complete your transformation.
This is just a little game.
But I can take some blood. It's really disgusting. You could just sit there and watch it happen.
And we're back. Matt, how about you go? Body of work. Or fugue. I know. Yes. Yeah, if you have to make so many clones that you run out of money somehow, that's really the only way you'll run into trouble. Or like sci-fi murder Groundhog Day, which I thought for just a split second, kind of as the movie started to ramp up after the first act or so, I saw a sliver of a chance that it might go in that direction. And I'm like, oh, don't. Please don't. And then it doesn't. So it's fine. Because he only goes through, apparently, the three clones. And there's a good way to check this. Now, maybe this isn't 100% foolproof or definitive, but each time, supposedly, he has a clone and then one of them is killed, he gets an urn full of its ashes. And he ends up packing three urns into his luggage when he's about to head home at the end of the film. So it's possible, I guess, theoretically, considering how kind of unhinged things get near the end, that maybe there were some clones he didn't get urns for, but what I think is more likely is he was just so unhinged in his own mind that he didn't really know which way was up, and he really did just go through three, which is... Restraint is a weird word to use in the context of a film like this, but it shows a certain amount of restraint that, again, it's not like, okay, well, I'm just gonna murder 17 people in 6 days and get myself killed over and over and over and over and over again. Right. 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 I don't know how you feel about it. I'm inclined to say that I enjoyed Mia Goth's performance in this film more than in either of the Ty West films from last year, which is not to say I didn't enjoy either of those performances. I dug this one more, I think, most out of the three. Quite right. Sure. Right. Well, and the breastfeeding is prepared for a little bit too, because I'd say somewhere about 2/3 to 3/4 of the way through the film, when he really starts getting into the psychedelic root drug, there's basically an orgy that takes place. And again, one of these, like you said, and it's a very apt comparison, sort of Ken Russell altered states, sort of hazy montages where a bunch of primary color based shots kind of ping ponging around. And in addition to again, being very Ken Russell, it also gets, I think, closest to the sort of body horror component of his artistic inheritance, if you will, where the masks that we mentioned earlier that they kind of wear on their caper, in fact, we first see them being worn by these musicians working for the hotel, and they're supposed to be like traditional masks, and like, we still have some on sale if you want one. It's like, why God would anyone ever want one of these? Right. 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 So during this montage, we see snatches of like, okay, while everybody's having this kind of orgy, and everybody's fucking everybody else, except for Skarsgård and Mia Goth, who appear to just be fucking each other for the most part. First, it looks like they're wearing the masks, and then it starts looking like their faces are turning into the mask faces. And there's some shots where some suckling, or at least, you know, oral nipple play is taking place, and then weird stuff starts coming out of the nipple, or the nipple, like, stretches to an impossibly, you know, long extent. Yeah, it was very hideous. And again, it's the most straight up like father like son body horror that he does in this film. And so because that was there, that made the post climax suckling feel a little more prepared for. No. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Right. Right, right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'd say the one thing that gives me a little bit of pause about the film that I didn't love is I'm kind of lukewarm on the fact that Mia Goth's character goes from super fan to, I guess, facilitator of his downfall and frequent sexual partner and what have you, and then goes to belittling him, and then it goes back to, hey, we're doing this for your own good. This is what you need to, attain transcendence or whatever. And particularly because that is all wrapped up with a perfectly neutral, shove it back under the rug until next year, hey, nice meeting you sort of thing. It's just a little bit too much up and down and sideways, I think. It's maybe like one too many moves, just, I guess, in terms of the character's tone. I don't know. Right. Well, at the end, when during the climax, when she's saying, hey, this is what you need in order to become a man and so forth, if that had then subsequently been revealed to be, got you again, which is weird to say because that's almost like another pivot, but then again, in a way, it's not, because after she's revealed to have nothing but contempt for him, and we know that, and that would stay true kind of all the way through. It'd just be sort of like another trick in her bag of tricks, like, hey, I'm gonna lie to you one more time so I get you to murder the dog or whatever. And JK, never mind. I don't know. Again, I'm kind of grasping at straws or fumbling around trying to find exactly what I might have preferred here. But it feels like each pivot is almost maybe genuine from the perspective of the character in a weird way, and that makes it harder to parse or harder to buy. Whereas if, as she says during the death march, it was all bullshit, and we look back through the context up to that point and forward through the rest of the context through the end of the movie, and we see that that is pretty definitively true throughout, then okay, the character makes sense, I guess. Whereas as it stands, it really does seem kind of like a yes, but no, but yes sort of a thing. Yeah. Is not just right, yeah. Right. Well, I'm glad. So I'm glad what I said was not complete gibberish. So I'll take the win there, I suppose. You dick. No, go ahead. You beat me to it. So, as we indicated a few minutes ago, I also had Soma on the brain. We did play through that together a few years ago. Spoilers for Soma, I guess, but I'm gonna go ahead and ruin it because I feel like it's less likely that our audience is going to play through an entire video game than that they might actually sit down and watch, say, Seconds one day. But nevertheless, here's your warning. In Soma, your character, the character you follow, is this man who has signed up for this sort of underwater habitat mission of some kind, except it all goes terribly wrong, and he wakes up like 100 or 150 years or something into the future, and everybody's dead. All the human beings are dead, pretty much. And he, at least as he exists now, is just sort of an AI version of himself, if you will. It's a sort of computer recording of his consciousness and his personality that is now acting on its own, and you download yourself into some kind of robotic suit. And I think there's a point around the midpoint where you do this consciousness transfer thing the first time. You have to get from like one area of the facility to the other or something like that. You pose the question, or some other consciousness, AI person, whatever you're speaking to, cooperating with, might ask the question, hey, which one is you? There's a sort of a duplication process, or rather, is it duplication, in which case it's horrifying to contemplate, or is it really a straight move, a transfer, if you will, and you're not leaving anything behind? And then, and this is the big spoilery part, you get to the end, and the end game is that you get onto some kind of escape pod, basically, that's supposed to launch you to the surface. And you have to go through this transfer thing one more time. You do the transfer, and then, horror of horrors, you find yourself still trapped at the bottom of the ocean in this facility while you see the capsule or what have you hurtling towards the surface. And you're like, no, no, God, no. Right. Or if you think about it, really, the two versions in two different places in the facility. Anyway, horrifying stuff. Like you said, gameplay is nothing particularly special, but writing, atmosphere, visuals, all good stuff. So that makes it well worth your time. And it's not especially long. Yeah, that was good. In terms of movies, there's a few different things I thought of at various points. One, obviously, is Possessor, just because I came in thinking, like, well, you know, how is this going to compare to Possessor? That was his last movie. And I agree with you. I think I like Possessor a little bit more. I don't have anything against dark humor in my horror films, obviously. But I think, all in all, at least for what Brandon Cronenberg brings to the table, I think I just preferred the sort of straight up horrifying sci-fi dystopia of Possessor and the sort of unleavened alienation that Andrea Riseborough, of Oscar controversy fame now, is faced with in that film. So Possessor is good, but we did a whole episode on that. In addition to thinking about Ken Russell and Altered States during those montages, during the first montage in particular, I also, for whatever reason, thought of Neon Demon, the Nick Reffin film, just visually, color palette-wise, and also somewhat thematically. It's not about the rich metaphorically eating the poor per se, but it is about someone getting, I guess, gobbled up by the modeling industry and the sort of fame machine of Los Angeles. So there's some resonance there, and that's a movie I like a lot. Although, again, that's something we haven't reviewed, but I'm pretty sure I've recommended before. This isn't super relevant, but another piece of media that deals with this question of cloning and which one's the real one. There's this Netflix miniseries with Paul Rudd called Living With Yourself. I don't know if you heard about this at all. So he's this kind of schlubby middle-aged guy who hears about this sort of new agey spa where they're supposed to do, like, I don't know if they come out and say that it's gene therapy or what have you, but basically it's supposed to, like, strip away all the sort of accumulated defects of middle age, personality, and physically, basically spruce yourself up and make yourself good as new. And then the twist is it's in fact a cloning process with some gene editing, and they just kill the original and dump him out in the back. And original Paul Rudd survives and then basically has to fight with new Paul Rudd for his wife's affections and this, that, whatever. And it's not at all a horror premise, pretty much a straight up dramedy, but it's pretty good. It's fun. And it's, you know, very topical, at least on that sort of, again, question that Infinity Pool doesn't dwell on per se, because like you say, how could it? But it does kind of hang over the whole thing in the background a little bit. Even though they go through so many clones, you think, oh God, how many times has the real one been killed? How far removed are you really? So, seems relevant. And through that melange of sort of subsidiary recommendations, I'm going to pronounce myself as having fulfilled my responsibilities here. But yeah, so I don't think we're going to hang out on the monsoon beach with Alexander Skarsgård. I think we're going to fish our passports out from under the sink and fly home. But until next time, I'm Jim Smith. And we are the Shock Doctors. We'll see you later.
As always, we have some acknowledgments. Our music was composed by Will Connor. Audio for the bumpers was taken from Infinity Pool official trailer, uploaded by Neon. All rights reserved. Our next episode will be up on Sunday, February 19th, and we will be discussing Fear, some good old-fashioned January release schlock. See you then.